Hello and welcome to Monocle on Culture. I'm Robert Bound. On today's show, we're bringing you a dispatch from this year's Venice Biennale, the 60th edition of the world's most prestigious art event. But far more than just an event, the Biennale acts like a temperature test for the state of contemporary art right now. Who's making a name for themselves? What kinds of themes and subjects are taking centre stage? How are politics coming into play? And what's the mood of the global market? The title of this year's main exhibition was Foreigners Everywhere. And unsurprisingly, therefore, many pavilions tapped into themes of belonging, migration and the febrile state of global politics. On today's show, the first of two from the floating city, we'll be hearing from the artist and curator behind an astounding inaugural pavilion for Ethiopia, finding out how the artist representing South Korea managed to bottle the scent of a peninsula, and examining how history is never far from the surface of the mosaic works on display at the Romanian pavilion. All aboard the number one Vaporetto, then, we're on our way to the Giardini on today's Monocle on Culture. The very first Ethiopian pavilion to arrive in Venice did not disappoint. Curated by the British writer Lem Cisse, the striking paintings by artist Tesfaye Ergesa made a memorable debut. Both large-scale figurative paintings and smaller portraits capture Ethiopian iconography and German influences, where Ergesa spent a number of his years studying. At a buzzing opening, which included a traditional Ethiopian coffee ceremony, it was clear that the show had caught the attention of the art crowd and the eye of many a collector. I took both artist and curator aside to find out more about the underlying themes of the exhibition. And here's Lem on the central idea for the show.
Well, the central idea for the show links to the theme of the Biennale, which is foreigners everywhere, as defined by the curator of the Biennale. And so the title of this exhibition is Prejudice and Belonging. I mean, I must talk about my relationship to Tesfaye and how...
Please do, yeah.
Is that okay? Because that to me feeds into what this whole exhibition is about as well. It's not simply a drawing by numbers, you know, there's something much deeper going on. And Tesfaye some time ago, and Tesfaye will be able to speak to this, from Ethiopia, decided that he wanted to curate his exhibition. So the vision that I'm within that has made this happen is centrally inside the artist, which is a joy. So we then embarked on building a relationship through Tesfaye's work, through him making the work in the studio. I'm sorry to talk about you while you're sat here. And feeling each other out, really, you know, was I up to the job? Was I, you know, able to connect with Tesfaye and connect with Tesfaye's work? My job is to serve as curator, to serve the artist, and serve the artist's vision. Whichever way that manifests. So that could be a conversation. That could be a conversation about the work. Actually, Tesfaye's his attention to his work is his business. You know, that's not for me to intrude on or to influence or to whatever. But the wider context, that's what we can discuss. We did discuss.
It's beautifully put. And I wonder, Tesfaye, in that instance, what it's like, you're not working to a brief, but working in collaboration. Sometimes there's strength in numbers. Sometimes it can put an artist into a box. How was it working in the studio and coming up with this fresh body of work under the BDI of Lem Cisse?
Well, actually, like, this is something I was thinking about for a long time. I told you, Lem, like, I've been looking for to meet Lem since, I don't know, 3 years or something like that, since I know you, basically, because... Now we are connected. Lemon, he was born and raised in London, but basically his parents are from Ethiopia. I'm from Ethiopia. And he's really a good craftsman in terms of words. And I'm an artist and I do a lot of things with image. So the collaboration between image and words, you know, in my imagination looked amazing. I tried to contact him and he was willing, you know, to join. And since then, you know, we have, I don't know, like, this is an incredible journey for us together, and now we are here.
And this, the work that you and Lem have been talking about, it looks so bold and so beautiful on the walls of the palazzo here. When we walk in, there's a short video of you working, and it's plain to see your sort of joy and confidence with paint. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your relationship with the brush and with paint going back.
Well, actually, like, painting is like an incredible medium, you know. Basically, you can do, you know, almost everything with it, even if it's just, you know, a visual element, but you can still add, you know, lots of abstract imagery into it so that, you know, to give it a sense of, you know, reality. One of the things that fascinates me about painting, though, is that I am able to learn about myself a lot. And this is an incredible journey. It's not about, you know, things that I know only, you know, even though that is always like, you know, part of the painting, but it's just like a medium to go beyond what you know and into a greater dimension. And actually, then you have to trust the process and you have to go bold, because as long as the painting in the studio, it's a conversation between the painting and me, and it can go on and go on until we both like kind of need a break or like go to different painting. This is very, very interesting. If you want me to go into a little bit of detail, like, you know, the process goes on. I have always like a kind of fragile image in my head. And then I use the surface of canvas, you know, to take that for me onto it. And then the canvas at some point become full. And then I take some down and it become empty again. And then I fill it up with motif, image, figures. And then actually it's like it goes up and then down and up and down. And at the end, I kind of keep only the things that I cannot remove. And that becomes a painting.
And you work, the show here is full of really large images. I mean, you presumably are standing on a ladder for doing the top half of these pictures. And then they're buddies are these small portraits. And there's a wonderful sort of juxtaposition of scales, not necessarily of subject matter or of style. Is that a bit of a... They're obviously telling a different story. Maybe you'd like to tell us what the story is of the relationship between the scale and whether or not they are a bit of a palate cleanser after working on such a big canvas.
Yeah. Well, it's completely different, but at the same time, they have also shared so much. You can see it as if you are making a movie, you know, like you have this wide angle where you see all the elements and then you focus on the face at some point. And in terms of like working, in terms of process, like a big painting takes really long time. So you kind of build up a relationship, very intimate relationship, because it stays with you for a long time. But at the same time, you need like smaller work so that, you know, you can work, you can, you know, finish everything and then see whether it is, whether you like it or not. So it takes like a couple of days and the other one like a couple of weeks. So it gives you like, you know, that kind of balance, you know, to see something, you know, whatever result that comes.
I love that idea that it's like a movie, you know, you're doing a wide angle lens and then a close up. Len, wanted to ask you, in terms of the collaboration, and words and images are always a fascinating, they don't always make happy bedfellows. They obviously have done in this instance, because I wondered what sort of words and language you're using to talk with each other, because artists tend to want to paint a picture rather than describe it, and you are obviously in the business of words. So I'd love to know about that sort of linguistic relationship.
Well, let me start from Foreigners Everywhere, the theme for the entire festival, by the curator of the festival. It's words as art. It's Foreigners Everywhere made into neons, and those neons were part of a arts activism movement by a French collective. So words are right at the heart of what this festival is. And actually the curator in his introduction spoke of poets as well. And a lot of the Biennale have matched up with poets, funny enough. The artist has chosen to be with a poet, and poets and artists have been together since the beginning. So our relationship, the relationship between poetry and art, is strong and has always been. In the office of Saatchi Yeats, there is a Kiefer piece, giant Kiefer piece, really, really dark and beautiful, and in it there is a poem. So, you know, poetry and art have a very strong relationship, and I think a strong artist, as Tesfaye, has somehow recognised that and somehow asked for this poet from thousands of miles away to sort of connect, and I truly have. And in fact, there is one word inside this whole exhibition which I noticed the other day, and I'm really pleased, and that word is fragile.
And this is the word that you started with. You had this idea that these paintings come from, you have a fragile idea or a fragile image of a of a human frame or a person, or is it a theme, Tesfaye, that is the fragility?
You know, you can say like most of my paintings comes from the human fragility, recognizing that, and my fragility and the fragility of every other being. And also, like, you know, I was telling Lemon last time, like, you know, human being, even, you know, when you see the development of any human race, and most of the things related to their fragility as well, you know, to protect themselves, to sustain, you know, their life and so on. And out of fragility comes, you know, mightiness at the same time. It's just a paradox. As an artist, that can be also like something you can use, because weakness becomes strength in terms of painting, you know, showing your emotion to a stranger needs a strength. And then these are the things, like, you have to be open with yourself and recognize it, and because it belongs to you and it belongs to everyone else as well. So
just on this idea of Lem's pinpointed fragile as a central word in this.
It's the only word. That's what I said. It's the only word in the exhibition. I wasn't saying it's central, but it is the only one. I've got to say, if you don't mind me saying, but the strength and I don't want to say nobility, because I don't like the word to describe African figures, but there is a confidence actually in these figures, which comes from an inner strength, which can show vulnerability, you know. And in the writer's term, the writer's word I've heard for this is radical vulnerability. It's like strength with being vulnerable and being able to show yourself. And I see that in the work, and it leaves the viewer confounded. Tesfaye has a brilliant confounded about, oh, these are confident people. These are not people who are lost. They may be migrants. They may be in a different country. They may be the strangers to other people, but they're not strangers to themselves. They know themselves. And Tesfaye spoke to me about, we are the foreigners, we who enter the gallery. They're not the foreigners. You know, the theme of this is foreigners everywhere, but they're not. They're at home. He's at home with them. The artist, they're his people. It's so powerful. We are the foreigners.
The writer Lem Ciseva, curator of the first Ethiopian pavilion at the Venice Biennale. And of course, we also heard from the artist himself, Tesfaye Ergesa.
Portugal has plenty more to offer visitors than sun, sea and sand. With its vibrant cities, rolling vineyards, an incredible history of design and a resourcefulness that always amazes.
It's a fun place to eat. I mean, like, you just don't stop. It's sunny and it's warm and everything's outside. Like, it's great.
Portugal, the Monocle Handbook, is the first in a brand new series revealing our favorite places to eat, stay and shop from Lisbon to the Azores. Should you wish to stay a little longer, it will also help you find a neighborhood that could become your new base and introduce you to the people who have already put down roots. Head to monocle.com to find out more and prepare to see this fascinating nation afresh.
Now, how do you bottle the essence of a country? Well, the artist behind the South Korean pavilion used the opportunity of the Biennale to do just that. Koo Jong-ae's installation in the South Korean pavilion proved that contemporary art can be about more than just one of the senses. During last summer, Koo collected scent memories from members of the public from the entire Korean peninsula. Some 600 scent memories were mixed together into 17 scent experiences, which can be encountered in this exhibition. A levitating cartoonish bronze figure expels the scents from his nostrils in a playful and frankly intoxicating perfume. Here's Koo to tell us more.
We wanted to, my project Odrama City wanted to portray Korea Peninsula. So the way to do this, it was collected all the people's memories and created new scents from that. So we had an open call from June to September last year, and then over the globe to collecting the scent memory of Korea through Korean and non-Korean people who in Korean and North Korea, South Korea, and out of the country where the people who are visited Korea, as well like for their work or scholarships or as well the tourist and who remembers the Korean Sen. So we collected in the end 600 storytelling about Korea. Then from then we started to edited about interesting words, categorized as like cities and small villages or mountains, geographically rivers, also the industrial area or where we massively grow. And also the many categories we are trying to figure out what kind of memory we getting from 600 storytelling. We discussed with a company who are working for smell to produce with the nose engineers, and we packed one smell, the scents from Korea, called the Odonma cities. So we normally the making smell and scent. It takes a lot of time because it's engineering the structure of the particle and the physics and all the ingredients that is from so wide connections in nature intense. And so we have only extracted sen that can be accessible for the public space, like sen as a public project, you know. We bottled in, we convert into also edition and installations in the Korean pavilion. And other 16 cents making into really realistic scents about Korea, urban scent like scent of Seoul, or Changdeokdae like the storage of all the ingredients for Korean food, and also some Korean traditional architect, also their environment like human smell. The people also remember the nature of Korea, like a fog, also winter smell, and the different time of the day, like early morning, very cold morning, or also sometimes evening air, they especially recognize, they describe about this. And some people also recognize the scent of Korea from outside of Korea, like in Canada, while they are kind of having a coffee with some kind of donuts in the sour cream, they remember that was Korea scent, so they also submit this kind of story. But we enjoyed so much about the variety of memory and the information that we got. Actually, we collected 600 storytelling, but it's from a very old memory to a recent memory. Like a machine, the human being cannot reproduce any new knowledge without memory. So it's not about remembering and preserving of your old heritage, but to creating the educated, reflective, inclusive new futures.
The representative of the South Korean pavilion, Koo Jong-ae, there. And finally on today's show, where the Biennale's title of Foreigners Everywhere makes the curator's show but doesn't necessarily need to influence the pavilions and countries, it was uncanny that migration and identity really were mirrored in different ways by the various pavilions. Representing Romania was the artist Sherban Savu, whose exhibition What Work Is explores the iconography of work and leisure. His large mosaics and paintings, the result of some 20 years of work, are inherently tied to contemporary politics. They reflect our current relationship with work while referencing the complex history of Bolshevism in Romania and historic artistic movements such as Pointillism. Here's the artist Sherban with more.
In this exhibition, I propose the theme of work and leisure, the relation actually between work and leisure, a theme that is quite debated nowadays. They are doing experiments of cutting the working days of the week to four in Germany, in UK as well. So it's an important theme for our society now, and it's linked quite well with other themes like ecology, for example, or overproduction or consumerism and so on.
So you're sort of already looking to the future there with the idea of 4-day weeks. Some people are praying for that, some people aren't, depending upon what industry, I suppose. But you are also looking back in Romanian history, in quite recent Romanian history, to Nicolae Ceaușescu and the 6-day week. Can you tell us a little bit about how his rule and his way of governing Romania bears itself out in some of the paintings?
Well, actually, I look at the present through the filter of history, and specifically art history. Because in starting the mid-2000s, when I came back from a grant here in Venice, I studied 2 years here in Venice, between 2002 and 2004, I came back to Romania and discovered that I can paint ideas and themes that I've been thinking of, but I never considered painting them. So it coincided with my artistic maturity, and I wanted to learn more about what happened from the Romania before 89, the communist Romania, to nowadays, to mid-2000, let's say. And it was a way of learning about myself and about the society I live in. And I took, let's say, the themes used in the socialist realism art, and I proposed them to nowadays. So the most important figure in the public art of communism, it was the figure of worker.
Just quickly, to define socialist realism, this is the sort of celebration of the noble worker in kind of the Stakhanovite, as it were, in the Russian realm, that sort of perfect man, perfect worker.
Exactly. It was the new man conceived in the ideological laboratories of the communism, and it was the propaganda art. It was the art full of ideology. What I wanted, actually, it was to remove this ideology out of the subject, out of the image, out of the picture. So I chose people working their free time and resting in their working time.
Or turning it on its head somewhat.
I chose non-heroical characters, small canvases in the beginning with anonymous figures, with real scenes, with everyday life, but focused on the specific themes used in the socialist realism.
And so we see, I mean, looking across here, we see perhaps acts of heroism, perhaps, you know, heroic men and women going about their working day, but we also see sort of Renoirish scenes of riversides with sunbathers. We see something a bit like a sort of hay wain over here with a ferry crossing and things like that. So you're looking at art history and at the sort of propagandist history in art.
Yeah.
And it looks also a bit like religious history.
Yes,
Chevan, tell us about how all these meld together in your mind, and whether they also gel together in certain of this polyptych that you put up.
Well, actually, of course, these are the works made during almost 20 years. And many ideas came to my painting in those years. But the curator and I, we selected, let's say, themes and paintings and works more related to the work and leisure. But, of course, they contain also other ideas, like the relation between ideology and propaganda, which is quite an important idea in my work. The polyptych, for example, is a canonical form of art.
There is something very much like a very grand church about the way that you've hung this show as well.
Exactly. It's a religious form of art, actually. But in this polyptych is completely like. But my idea and my suggestion is that those religion and propaganda and ideology, they somehow work together, or they meet at some point. In a totalitarian state like Romania was before 1989, religion was overtaken by ideology. The art of the socialist realism actually used the figures of the heroical figures of workers as they were saints. It was a replacement, actually. Just thinking about Lenin mausoleum in Russia, no? It's actually the relic It was made a saint out of a historical figure, no? It's the same mechanism, actually.
And I just wanted, while we're on the subject of the mosaic, to come over here and look at this sort of maquette, this model of an apartment block, which I believe is here in Venice, in a new part of the town, is it? Or is this mural going to go up in...
No, the model actually is the building I grew up in. It's in Cluj, Romania. And I imagined a mosaic for this kind of buildings, which this building is quite emblematical for Romania and for the communist times. And I imagined, what if a real scene with real people would look on the facade of this kind of block, for people who actually live in this kind of block of flats. It's a mosaic made for them, a real scene with real people, a real picnic, a real leisure. It's a sort of historical revenge.
I love that idea. It's very beautiful, it's very meaningful, and it's really stunning show. I just wanted to ask you one final question. We talked at the beginning of our conversation about these four-day weeks and where the future might look. If you painted for another 20 years under a similar theme, what do you think you might be painting here?
Now I think I'm interested in also in other themes, not necessarily in this one, but on the other hand, the society changes, and I'm interested in my times, actually. And also, I cannot understand the present without looking into the past. I cannot understand art without looking into its history. So I will be all the time focused on what's around me, but also about my readings or my interest in certain themes, or this can change quite often, actually. And I would like to follow my instinct.
And that is it for this week. My thanks to Sherban Savu and to all my other interviewees in Venice this week. Monocle on Culture is produced by Sophie Monaghan-Coombs and Steph Chungu, and Steph also edits the show. We'll be back at the same time next week, but until then, from me, Robert Bounds, thanks for tuning in. ¶¶